This is a replay of the Thursday night, January 12th WGN show. We started at 11 after the game. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. You have a couple hours to spend together tonight. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And hopefully we'll get to the Whispers, because I picked out a bunch of their stuff from the early years. And it's interesting, because when you talk to Whispers, you almost have to do the Dory record story. But that is so involved, I'm going to save that for another night. But suffice it to say, they were a great little L.A. label, independent. And it was about 1964 when Lou Bedell, who owned the label at that time outright, decided to go in a soul direction, and that's what signed the Whispers and the Superbs. And through about 68, 69, they had some really tasty stuff. But the history is a fascinating one, and we'll get to that. And of course, we'll touch on it, because you can't talk the Whispers without talking Dory. But we'll leave Dory for another night altogether. We're doing it because Gordy Harmon died, and last founding, well, I shouldn't say last founding member of the Whispers, because of course the brothers, Scotty and Walter Scott, Wallace and Walter Scott, are still very much alive and still performing as the Whispers with Leavell. I'm trying to think of his first name, but Leavell Degree. That is his first name, actually. Leavell Degree. And we've talked a lot about him, because he had the misfortune of having an arrest right at the time the Whispers got back on the charts. That was about December of 79. I think it was December 27th, 1979, that the arrest occurred. But in any event, that said, he certainly turned his life around in every way, and he and the Scott brothers tour today. Nick Caldwell, who was such an integral part of the Whispers, died in 2016. Marcus Hudson, he died in 2000, and Gordy Harmon left the group in 1973. And when Gordy left, that's when the Whispers decided we're a foursome, not five. And so, but we'll talk about that history. In the meantime, Sam wants to go in a completely different direction, and we can do that. So, Sam, welcome to WGN Radio. Let me say hello officially. There we go. I think that's the magic twanger that puts.
And thank you so much.
Sure. What's up?
I was calling. I would presume by now that you've probably learned of the sad passing of Lisa Marie Presley today.
Yep, 54 years old.
Yeah. Well, it's ironic, because the last time I tried to call, I got on and John had me on the line, but I was one of the last callers. That was like last week. But
I'm sorry.
So I couldn't get my feet in at that time. But I was wanting to find out if you've ever done anything on Rael Donner.
Well, I certainly know. I know all about Rael. Talk about Chicago all the way, Norwood Park. And actually, I remember in 1984, early in 84, I got a call from Dick Biondi, because I was a radio editor for Billboard at the time. And he said, hey, Rael's got lung cancer. He's not going to make it. You know, we could sure use some publicity and maybe a fund. And I said, I'll publicize it any way I can. Rael Donner had the fortune and the misfortune of sounding a lot like Elvis. and I say it both ways. Originally, he was in the Gents in high school, and in the Rockin' Five, and the Rockin' Five actually played in Chicago television. And then 1959, he was on Alan Freed's Big Beat program in New York, and they released a single at that time with the Gents, and then the Gents toured with the Sparkle Tones, Joe Bennett's group. But Donner, meanwhile, became a solo act, did a cover of "Girl of My Best Friend" the first time, and that was the backing was the Starfighters.
Nash, if you could spin that at some point.
Well, yeah, that's the first time. Then, you know, Gone Records re-recorded and re-released that. So the one that became a hit wasn't the first rendition of that. It was the second one that Gone re-released, and that was Goldner, George Goldner, who did that. And then, of course, You Don't Know What You Got Till You Lose It, and that was his only top 10 hit on Billboard nationally. It peaked at number 4. And, then, of course, She's Everything and all that. And then after the relationship with George Goldner, he was on Reprise for a while, which isn't surprising since he had played with Sammy Davis, but also on Redbird, which was normally thought of as a girl group label, but believe me, that's not what Lee Bernstoler had in mind. It's just the way it turned out. But none of that stuff was successful. And through the 70s, really, he was cold. But when Elvis died, suddenly there was interest again. And he's actually, in 1981, the voiceover guy for This Is Elvis, the movie.
I am aware of that,
yeah.
Yes.
And a number of people cite him as an inspiration, including Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin, believe it or not. And he mentioned it when Led Zeppelin was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Absolutely. The first one was That's All Right With Me, and that was on Scotty, and that was in 1959. And then, of course, Girl of My Best Friend and the Gone version, a hit. He had some other stuff on Gone that didn't chart, like And Then, which is an interesting little record. And then You Don't Know What You Got Till You Lose It, of course, was the big one. And then Please Don't Go charted a little bit. School of Heartbreakers didn't chart, but then She's Everything got into the top 20. And then after that, on Gone, I think, it kind of bubbled under with What a Sad Way to Love Somebody in Loveless Life. And I guess To Love also would be there. And then the Reprise singles, which did absolutely nothing. Well, one of them was called Second Miracle of Christmas. Do I need to say more? And then there were a few others. They was on Fontana for a minute there. In fact, he did a version of Good Lovin' and a couple other things. And then now you're talking about labels nobody's ever heard of. And that really was it. So, yeah, I thought he was great. Like I say, the fortune and the misfortune of sounding like Elvis.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate it is, but I was told by a friend who actually went to school with him, and I think he actually went to Taft High School as well. But his... if I understood it correctly, he actually had the opportunity to meet Elvis, and Elvis actually basically endorsed him, not because he was, and like I said, I don't know the validity of this, it's just what I was told, but he had a one-time meeting with Elvis, if I understand it correctly, and Elvis, wasn't like he was trying to copy Elvis. He just had a similar voice.
Yeah, well, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll tell you another guy who had the fortune and misfortune.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I think he actually did Girl My Best Friend prior to Elvis. I'm not sure about that.
I thought that too, but it turns out it's not true. I had always thought but it's not. But the other guy who had that same fortune, misfortune to sound a lot like Elvis was, of course, Terry Stafford, who redid Suspicion that became a big hit. But yeah, Jim Casey, the guy who wrote Grease, the stage play, he went to Taft with Raoul Donner.
Yes, so, I'm aware of that.
Yeah, so...
One more interesting point that I think might be interesting to you is that Raoul Donner actually has two sons. I don't actually know the type of music that they play, but they actually are playing locally in Chicago, his two sons, and they do an act.
Interesting. I'll look into that. I didn't know. But in Grease, the character Johnny Cassino is patterned after Raoul Donner.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Nice to know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And, of course, Jim Casey is actually an amalgam of two names, Jim Jacobs and Warren Casey, and they co-wrote it.
Oh, I gotcha. Understood it now. Okay.
Yeah. That's why I said Jim Casey.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that, I have minor contact with Jim Jacobs. And Grease, they're actually doing a television version of Grease, starting, I think, April the 5th.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to do a series, a Grease-type series, starting April the 5th.
What network's going to do this?
I don't know what network, but I believe it's coming out of Paramount.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm gonna keep your eye on that. But
absolutely,
I don't want to swallow the rest of your time, but I thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm glad you brought him up, because I do not want Rael Donner to be forgotten by any means, and he is certainly a Chicago jewel.
Yeah, and if you get a chance, I know you don't do much of that rock stuff, but if you get a chance at some point to play his version of Girl, My Best Friend, would be wonderful to hear.
Oh, yeah. No, I actually, that and She's Everything, and, you know, I play them regularly, not necessarily as bumpers, but on my stations here. I like those songs, so I got no problem with that.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, so yeah, I was so sad when I got that call, and I guess it was January of '84, and I said, "Oh no, that's terrible," and indeed, it was a loss. Just like Gordy Harmon was a loss when we heard of his death, which actually was last Thursday, January 5th, died while sleeping at home, 79 years old, and all I've heard is natural causes, but glad that he was at home and knowing that he's in a better place. The Whispers were around for a long time, and I say that because you'll see articles that say the Whispers were formed in 1964, au contraire. And even saying 1963, I don't know that I'd go there. They actually grew up in Watts in South Central Los Angeles, most of them in the same housing project. And it was Nick Caldwell and Marcus Hudson who were the Eden Singers in the early 60s. And then the Scott twins and Wallace and Walter were twins. And Gordy Harmon were recruited, and that was the history. Now, of course, other than singing on street corners, nobody really heard them until they were signed to Dory. And like I say, when you talk about the Whispers, you kind of have to talk about Dory, and it was a fascinating little label, and we will go into the whole history of it sometime. But the bottom line is, by 1964, Lou Bedell, who at that point owned the label outright, realized that he needed a better direction than he was going. And that's when he just wholeheartedly embraced soul. And the Whispers were probably his first and or second signing. And I say that because the Whispers and the Superbs were kind of signed about the same time. And it was just a terrific, terrific group. And as I mentioned, they're from Watts, but it was Jordan Downs, the housing project. It was 103rd Street and Grape in Watts. And that's, you know, when they were the Eden Trio. And so here now, they still are not the Whispers by any means. In fact, it wasn't until Lou Bedell signed them, and he listened to their sweet soul sound and said, "You know, you guys are kind of whispering. We'll call you the Whispers." Now, Lou Bedell was famous for calling groups everything, and the Whispers were lucky he didn't own the name, because that was something he routinely did on Dory. But the Whispers, in fact, did get the name, and the absolute first Dory single was "Never Again," and we'll play it and talk a little more about the Whispers. But if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine too, right here, 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's the Whispers' first recorded song on Dory, Never Again. It didn't chart. In fact, nothing they did on Dory charted, and that is just as upsetting as can be, because they had some terrific, terrific stuff. But it wasn't until later that they actually hit a national chart. But so here they were. They were at Jordan Downs, and they were in high school at Jordan High in Watts, right on 103rd Street. And as they just started to get out of high school, I think that that one of the guys was still in when they said, you know, we're going to troll the streets for a record label. And there's a part of Hollywood that was sort of Record Row, and they were you know, making the rounds from there and there. Like I think Dick Caldwell was still in high school at the time, but the Scott twins and Marcus Hudson and Gordy Harmon, I think, were all graduates of Jordan in 61 or 62. But in any event, here they were, and they're before they make the rounds, they're practicing like all the groups do, you know, find a stairwell, as you will. And their influences were the Flamingos and the Temptations and the High Lows, if you're ready for that, and even the Four Freshmen. And I remember one of the guys saying, "We sang everything we could learn, including the Hertz car rental commercial." And I can't even imagine. Yeah, so I guess it could be worse. But as I say, timing is everything, because here's Lou Bedell, and he's got Dory Records now right on Vine Street in Hollywood, and he's looking. And decides, and you know, when we get to the Dory story, we'll talk more about how he went in that soul direction, because he certainly wasn't there before. He was ultimately a stand-up comic originally, and more of a vaudeville kind of borscht belt guy. But nonetheless, here are the teenagers who come in, and they record Never Again and As I Sit Here. In fact, they recorded five singles at the same session at Gold Star Hollywood, and Gold Star Recording Studios are pretty legendary. And they, you know, through Lou's contacts and others, they start to get some gigs. And the first big one was at the California Club, and they were completely knocked over, because they were opening for one of their idols, the Temptations. And it was just a great time for 4 years on Dory. The only thing wrong was absolutely no hits. And for the life of me, I don't know why. They did some great stuff. And, you know, in terms of some of them, and I won't play them all, obviously, but The Dip was a great little record. Nick Caldwell wrote it. Yes, it wasn't a remake of somebody else's song. It was the Whispers all the way. And they always had some great studio musicians on their stuff, and Ernie Freeman, among others. And it was Lou Bedell who produced it, for better or worse. And I say it like that because some of the production on this is really nice. And some of them, it's like, can we go back and shoot him? And you'll see what I mean when we get to some of this stuff. But after The Dip, it was even better as far as I'm concerned. 1965, As I Sit Here, was just a tremendous record. You know, I'm enjoying as I sit here just too much. I realize that I'm blowing the news, and we don't want to do that. So I'll keep listening to As I Sit Here, and you can listen to the news on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Bobby Sheen did this record as well, and at first I thought it was the Whispers covering Bobby Sheen, but it's absolutely the other way around. Nick Caldwell wrote it, Dr. Love, and it was out in Dory in 1965, and it was Bobby Sheen who was redoing the Whispers, not the other way around. And I played As I Sit Here a moment ago. I love that song, too, and I remember so well. I was sitting in a pizzeria with John, and they had some type of, you know, piped in music from somewhere, and it's the usual pablum, and all of a sudden I hear As I Sit Here, you know, by the Whispers. I mean, I was astonished. I almost stopped breathing, and I said, I got to know what service, what are they listening to? Why would they play something this good? And so I get the guy who apparently owned the pizzeria, and I said, what service are you using? Well, this poor guy must have thought I was like from BMI or ASCAP, and I was there to bust him. And he's like, I know nothing, you know. And anyway, he turns the music off, no less, and wouldn't tell me a thing. And of course, I'm not there to bust him. I just want to know who is using As I Sit Here in rotation. I never did find out. But Gordy Harmon co-wrote As I Sit Here. And, you know, I have a number of ties for my favorite Whisper record, and that's among them. So we'll play more of them, but 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, your calls always take precedence. And Johnny D in Ohio, I got your emails. Yes.
Okay.
That was great.
That's why I was calling to see if you noticed them and opened them or whatever.
Well, I'll tell you, I saw it on the screen. It said email sent, and I thought, oh, I better go look for it. And then I saw it. I saw you send it twice. And these are great. Johnny D got his prize, and the one that cost us $22.45 to get to him. So bottom line is, I always say the prizes aren't worth the postage, and boy, this proves it. And he got, looks like a bunch of DVDs and CDs and certificates, of course, and a comic, and all these certificates. So yes, don't frame them all, you'll go broke.
I know. My wife was the what would you call it, the curator. Is that what you call it?
Somebody,
yeah, like pictures?
Well, actually I was thinking the curator like of a museum, somebody who would keep all this stuff and order it together.
Yeah, man, I should have called from Caesar's Palace, because whenever I'm in my room here, I get the echo, but downstairs I didn't. But anyhow, yeah, she, you know, like the last 2 days, Wally, and I'm kind of tired tonight, too, because I had early appointments.
I'm so sorry.
You know, like yesterday and today, I had an early appointment at 2 p.m., okay?
Yes. I know. Hey, I know that's early. I'm convinced it is. Yes.
2 p.m. I had these two early appointments. And
yeah.
So I went, you know, yesterday, and then, you know, you came on half an hour late. But anyhow, so I was tired. I didn't want to. But anyhow, I finally got around today.
Yeah.
And then what happened is this appointment today, I had to go get to your optometrist glasses place, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I had to go get new lenses.
Uh-huh.
Okay? They called me. He said, yeah, John, yeah, we got your lenses are in over here, you know. I said, yeah, all right. You know, so then they said, well, you want to make an appointment to come and get them? I said, okay. So then I made it for the, you know, I was trying to get like, I said, what time are these closed? Like about 5 or something like that. Anyhow, I was trying to get, she says, the latest I got open is 2 p.m., all right? So I said, okay, I'll take it, you know. And then, so I got out of bed today and dragged myself, got ready, you know.
Yeah.
And then I go in there, and this one young lady, Yeah, she was a very attractive young girl. Anyhow, but, she wasn't that young. Digress, she was probably in her 40s or something.
Yeah. Hey, us, that's young. Got it.
She was in her 40s. Yeah. And so, anyhow, she's being real nice, you know. So I says, okay, you know, where's my... So I said, here's my glasses, because, see, the way it worked, if I would have wanted to get new glasses with the new lenses, you know?
Yeah.
Then it would have cost me, like, I don't know, $136 or something like that.
Right.
But then if I just got the new lenses, then they put them into the old glasses, you know, the old frame.
Right.
And it didn't cost me nothing. So I said, okay, I'll take that way, you know. And so that's what I did. And then they called me when they came in. And so I went in today. And then she takes my glasses. I'm sitting in this room, you know, looking in one of them mirrors that they give you, you know, to, you know, try them on and everything. And, you know, and then she comes back in. She's smiling and everything. And the glasses, so she goes, she's smiling. She goes, these are your old lenses.
What?
I said, what are you talking about? She goes, they messed up and sent us the, they're way too small for these frames. Oh, they sent the wrong lenses. Or
oh,
made
jeez.
I said, what? Yeah. I said, man, I says, you know, I had to switch appointment. I told her I switched an appointment to make this one. You know? She goes, well, I'm going to call them. I'm going to call them and tell them. I said, it was a good thing I ain't calling them, you know.
Yeah, here's the problem, though. You see, you're getting them for free, so you can't ask for a discount.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I couldn't ask for a discount.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know how they say if you miss your appointment, that they'll charge you or something like that?
Yeah.
Like, well, not at the optometrist. I don't know what they do, but I'm thinking, hey, you know. But so what could I do? You know, so what I did then, you know, this girl was so appealing to me that I said, are you married?
No.
I asked her if she was married, and she said, no. Right? So then I says, oh, okay. I says, she goes, well, listen, John, I'll call you when they come in. I'll personally call you.
Okay.
I said, okay. You know, so she's going to call me.
Well, that's, I know, and you're waiting with bated breath. Well, I'm jealous you get lenses for free. When I get mine, they're $1,400 each time. So I try not to change them too often. But as far as sympathy for your plight, no, today for me was back to the dentist, which, of course, you know, is a two-hour trip, one way to go anywhere. And as I said to John, there are four words I hear at almost any medical appointment I've ever been to, and I heard them today. This doesn't usually happen. And yes, it was just going to be the permanent simple two crowns. Except the glue somehow not only fused them to each other, but to other teeth, and that was the end of flossing. So I said, no, it can't be the end of flossing. You must fix this. So an hour and a half later, with my gums completely torn up, they fixed it. So, of course, I won't be flossing for a few days anyway, because they said, no, as I'm bleeding over everything I own, they said, no, just a lot of salt water. And I said to John afterwards, I said, salt water be damned, I want a pizza. So that was that. But yes, I don't feel too badly for you since I was in hell too. But medical
so
visits.
Is this a man dentist?
No, it is not. It's actually not. And she's a great dentist all the way around. I really like her. But when it comes to this stuff, I'm telling you, and John's been with me more often than not. This doesn't usually happen. So there we are.
I had a root canal once.
Oh
years
no,
ago.
No, I don't want one of those. I just say take the tooth.
No, I am one, and the guy that did it, he's very good. He was very good. And he told me, he said, normally it's like straight, maybe a little curved, the root or whatever.
Mm.
He said, mine was all like curly, like, or something.
You didn't need that tooth, really. But
I don't have it anymore, I don't think. So it was a molar way in the back, and
probably
gone now.
They're dispensable. So
anyhow... My wife did them pictures.
Very
and
nice.
She actually laid them all on the ground.
Very artistic, very nice.
I know. And so I was thinking, I wanted to do it down in Caesar's Palace, but if I did it, Caesar would have been eating them things. You know?
Well, or using them for his own business,
yeah,
of course.
But he would have probably...
Yeah. Yeah.
He probably and, beat on him.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, you paper trained him at one point, so he's thinking, it's back. So why not? But, you know, if nothing else, you can probably use them at some point for insulation.
I'd say I'm loaded. And then I sent... Oh, and thanks for the James Taylor CD.
Oh, I knew. Believe me, when I saw those.
Wife, I said, she knows I like James Taylor.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I saw those, and I thought, yeah, Johnny D gets James. So I think there were like three of them.
Yeah, there was three of them, and they're some of my favorite ones. Because,
oh, good. Good. See, now you can listen all you want, and you don't have to request them.
Yeah. Well, I listen to them on my YouTube music. But...
Excellent.
Yeah, but I know that I'm familiar with all of them.
Good.
Now, what I wasn't familiar with was, but I'm going to, you know, like I say, I can spread this gift around because my little grandson, Sammy, he likes Harry Potter.
Yep,
know?
We sent you a movie.
And I think you sent a movie or
mm-hmm.
something.
Yep, we did, a Harry Potter movie, yep.
Yeah, and then... I texted my brother Gabe, you know, the one that you made a certificate for.
Yes, of course.
And I said, hey, Gabe, matter of fact, I sent him some of the pictures.
Yeah.
You know, like I sent you.
Yeah.
And there was more, but you could only send so many, like five or six.
Yeah, that's enough.
Yeah, that was enough. Yeah. But I sent them to my brother, too, and then I told him, I said, well, I said, I was down in the basement at Steve Bell's at the time. I said, well, I said, she sent you a certificate, too, for winning, and then a couple of items, you know.
Yeah.
And he said to me, he texted back, he said, well, listen, I said, I'll get them to you next time, next time our paths cross.
Right.
And he said, well, listen, the next time you're over the house, which is my dad's house, right?
Of course, yeah.
He says, next time you're over the house, just bring the certificate. He says, I'm not even interested in the other things that don't concern me.
Well, that's a good description of our prizes. We send things that don't concern you. Yep, that's it.
But... anyhow, Raleigh, I just wanted to call to tell you thanks.
Oh, my pleasure.
I thought I'd send you them pictures. My wife did a good job on that.
She did a wonderful job. Absolutely. So that's Becky, the lovely and talented Becky. So thank her from us.
Yeah, and she said, all right, you satisfied, you know, because I was saying, look, I got to take these pictures, you know. She goes, all right. She was cleaning the house, you know, and she got done. And then she goes... And I was saying, well, what about it? She goes, just shut up and I'll say, damn it. You know?
Yeah, you did a fine job.
She told me exactly what to do, and I did it, and there they were.
And there you are. There you are, and you're included. So thank you.
All righty, Raleigh. Yeah. I'll talk to you later then.
Okay,
thanks.
Sounds good. All right. Bye. So 888-876-5593. That would be 8888-Raleigh. We'll get to Laura and Willowbrook in moments right here on WGN Radio. You can read a story. All right, well, that worked out really well. I've got bootleg Whisper CDs, and obviously that one didn't, but I can do something about that right now, I think. We'll find out, in moments anyway. I was going to play Take a Lesson from the Teacher, which also is Storybook of Love. It's the it's a song, same record, so we'll play it as, I hope. You can read a storybook. There you go. You can turn from page to page. There is no end to the story called love. So take a lesson from the teacher. Yeah, yeah. So if you don't know the law, take a lesson from the teacher. Yeah, yeah. And you should know what love, just what love is all about. Whispers did it, it was Take a Lesson from the Teacher. When the Superbs did it, it was Storybook of Love. And actually, they put it out twice on the Whispers with both titles. But no matter what they did, it didn't hit. And actually, that's about the same time you started to realize that maybe production values at Dory were not what you'd want. And, oh man. Although, before we get to, yes, prime example number one in that painful story, which we will. We'll also play another one of my all-time favorite Whispers records coming up. So we're kind of reviewing their history, and I forget who asked me to do it. But if I look at Carol's notes, I bet you I can find out. All right, so 888-876-5593. We got Laura in Willowbrook. Welcome to WGN Radio. How's it going?
Oh, great, Raleigh, but I have a lot to tell you, so I'll try to talk fast. First thing, I don't know if you got the answer, but Paramount Plus is where you're going to see the Grease show.
Okay, good deal,
and
thanks.
It's going to be Rise of the Pink Ladies, which is instead of the Greasers, they're going to start out highlighting the girls.
Oh, man, and they're calling it the Pink Ladies?
Yes.
Now, yeah, I'm laughing about that already, and you might not remember. But, oh, man, it was the 1970s, and there was a guy who'd been a radio programmer of some note, Paul Drew. And Paul Drew had the ear of a lot of these Hollywood people, including the guy who ran NBC at the time, who was Freddie Silverman. And so he convinced them to do a show with a group called Pink Lady. Now, The only thing wrong was that Pink Lady was Japanese and didn't speak a word of English. And so they renamed the show Pink Lady and Jeff. Because Jeff spoke English, although you were kind of sorry he did when you saw this show. So, yes, every time I hear Pink Lady, I'm like, oh, my God, Paul Drew lives. yeah, I'm sure nobody at Paramount knows this, but I don't think I'd call anything Pink Lady anything. That's hilarious.
Oh, my gosh. That's a great story.
Oh, yeah. You'll have to look it up sometime. I'm sure if you look it up, the story Pink Lady and Jeff. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing community theater since I was in high school and I was in Greece. But what I wanted to say is this would be great. It'd be wonderful. Be professional. I could do acting, get on stage, get paid. And then I hear all the stuff that's been going on from the 70s and that. I told my friend, I says, your girls, little girls are beautiful. I says, you should get them into modeling. And even in the 70s, she says, I don't want to subject them to all that mess and all that the kids got to go through and, you know, the rejections and you're pretty, you're too fat, you're too skinny and all that. So they didn't like that at all. So they didn't do that. But to Lisa Marie real quick, I just can't imagine being part of a famous family. I was thinking, you know, she's probably one of those people that, hi, Lisa Marie, and how was your dad Elvis? And a lot of people probably don't even see her. They just think, oh, she's Elvis's daughter. And I don't think she much liked always just being known as, hey, I'm Elvis's daughter. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I think there were so many things in her life that were just sadly wrong from the start, that was just one of them. And remember, by the time Elvis died, he was only 42 years old, but at the time he was almost a joke. He was quite overweight. He was not selling records. He was appearing in Vegas, but it really was more for, you know, farm people from Iowa seeing him and all that, and the tickets including dinner weren't even $10, you know, that kind of thing. And the deal is, though, afterwards, whoever was advising Priscilla, whoever these people were brilliant, because they're the people who turned Elvis into a latter-day icon, you know, turning Graceland into a museum. And, I would say it's probably very safe to say that Elvis made more money in death than he did in life. Because of Priscilla's advisors, and so that worked out very well. But yeah, Lisa Marie had, to say the least, a troubled upbringing, and I'll just leave it at that. And
I hope her mom and everybody does all right. And I don't know what it is. People, just because somebody is famous, too, it seems like oh, you're famous. So, oh, they get put up on this pedestal no. that I think they have to live up to, and it's terrible.
Well, it is tough. And, of course, Lisa Marie had had four kids. And sadly, Benjamin Keough killed himself in 2020. But his sister, Riley, is an actress and a performer. And Riley Keough has done very well. Good-looking young lady. Mm-hmm. And then she has twins with her last marriage that didn't work out too well. Not the twins. Mm-hmm. The marriage. So, you know, obviously Riley's hurting today, and to say the least, and I'm sure the twins are as well. So I pray for them all. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Riley, thanks for all the great information. Your knowledge expansion is just amazing.
Terrific to talk to you. We'll hopefully hear from you soon. Thanks, Laura.
All right. Take care, Riley.
All right. So we'll take time out to find out what's going on in the WGN Radio newsroom on WGN Radio.
Come on and give me life, please let me. You gave my life, oh, you gave it to me. And that's why it's to you, yes it is, it's to you that I'm leaving. That's why my heart, that's why my heart is singing. Oh, please come and kiss me, give me life.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that was The Whispers' last record in 1966 that Laurie put out, and that's tied for my all-time favorite Whisper record. Like I say, it's a several-way tie, actually, but I thought this was just a marvelous record. So 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. Now, see, I remember all about I Was Born When You Kissed Me from 1966. Came out in November. Yeah. But I can't remember if we're done talking to Laura or not. Laura, are you still there? No, okay. So we must have concluded the Laura call. I didn't want to just hang up on her in case. And we'll say hi to Valerie in Warrenville. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hello, my dear. Thank you for the package.
Glad it arrived.
The guitar one?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Hang on a second. One of them was Boss Skaggs.
Okay.
It was an okay mix. It was an okay record. And I didn't realize the stuff that's on there was actually his when I was listening to it on the radio.
Ah.
I thought it was a girl.
Ah. Well, I'll tell you something. Many of those CDs make good coasters.
I'm going to give them to a friend of mine.
Excellent. Get him out of the house as soon as possible.
Especially the Time Life music, guitar, rock.
Oh, I can only imagine.
yes.
Well.
It's like you were saying, when they did the re-edit, they white noised it.
Yeah. Well, sorry to hear about that. Good luck on something better next time. We just ordered another stack of CDs for giveaways. They swear these are all soul. What you got last time were supposed to be all soul, too, but clearly they lied, so we'll see about this time.
Yeah, well, you know, I still say that if you ever want to get rid of those Jess Singer guy, you hate his guts. And right now, because you hate his guts, I can't see his name.
Oh, it must be like Neil Diamond or something.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, all right. Sure.
If you ever want to get rid of them,
you do understand they'll be 45s. You know they're not like CDs or cassettes or anything. They are records.
I will find myself a secondhand record player, darling.
All right. Well, I've probably got more Neil Diamond records than anybody wants. So, you know, hey. And it's not a question of finding it. So I know where they are, but we have not cleared out that location yet. And every time I go over there, there is so much there that I start to shake. And I say, well, some other time. But when we ever do, I will, you know, because I'm paying rent on these things whenever we do, I will make sure that I cull the Neil Diamond collection.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And if you want to send it half COD,
No. We pay for the postage.
Don't worry about it, darling. Yeah,
no.
I will accept half COD.
No. We don't.
You pay half, and I'll pay the other half, and then I'll have that collection.
No. You don't worry about that at all. Absolutely. It just be a while before I clean that out. I know I've kind of got it on tap to do before the end of the year, but of course I've been saying that for 3 years, so we'll see.
Well, as long as you get it to me by the time I'm your age, we're fine.
Okay. Sounds like you got plenty of time. All right, then. All righty, then.
Well, my dad threatened to be 104 and be shot by a jealous husband. Unfortunately, he didn't make it that far.
Yeah.
But the All other right. reason I'm calling is I watched the Elvis movie.
Yes.
The new Elvis movie.
And?
I learned some things about Elvis and Beale Street.
Uh-huh.
B.B. King?
Yeah, right. I know. By the way, I
learned all those songs?
Well, yes and no. The movies always take a lot of liberties with facts.
Yes, ma'am.
So, yeah.
But the bits of fact that I heard from different sources was like watching the portrayals of these men and women in that era, mm-hmm. singing those songs and mm-hmm. having it portrayed so beautifully,
mm-hmm.
so magnificently, that I don't care who you are, you gotta watch this film.
Well, all right. You can see Club Handy.
Because the whole essence
mm-hmm.
of them comes out in the portrayal now.
All right.
Their essence comes through. Their beautiful lyricness, expression, the whole... Keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
It resonates. A couple of places, I actually started crying because the music was so good.
Okay. Well, I might check it out. I know they said it was told from the perspective of Colonel Tom Parker, and if he ain't the devil, he's the closest thing on earth, was the closest thing on earth to it. So.
And you will not recognize Tom Hanks.
Well, I wouldn't anyway.
I mean, no.
No, I mean, I wouldn't anyway.
The ethical makeup of him?
Yeah.
So good.
All right.
You don't recognize Tom.
Well, there you go.
I didn't even realize it was Tom, even though I read the cover, until three quarters of the way through.
Okay.
When Tom peeked out for a second, and then he went back into character. I don't know how that happened.
Well, so indeed, I know some of that was at Club Handy, and some of that in the International, which, of course, today is Westgate, so... Well, when it was the International.
Is it still owned by the mob?
It used to be Hilton. It wasn't owned by the mob before. When it was the International, and that's before they built that other part of it that's there. Westgate, they do a lot of timeshare, is all I'll tell you about that. But for years, mm-hmm. Hilton had taken over the International, and then it became the Las Vegas Hilton for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. All right. Good deal. Well, I'll put it on the list. But remember, I've only seen about 5 movies, so don't count on me seeing a 6th. But in case I come by it, I will check it out.
Well, if there's someone you trust in your life to watch it and give you a concise synopsis.
Yeah, it's just, you know, time-wise, I just don't have time for movies. But it's good to note, and if I come across it and time permits, I will certainly take a look at it.
If nothing else, for the opening and ending credits and the visual CG for that,
okay,
absolutely beautiful.
Okay. So, is Dewey Phillips in it? Well, not the real Dewey Phillips, but does somebody portray him?
Dewey Phillips. If he is,
Dewey Phillips was on WHBQ, and you make a movie about Dewey Phillips, I'm going to watch it. I'll find a way. So yeah.
Well, I'm planning on watching it at least one more time before I give it back to my local library.
All right. Yeah. So when you do, I will send you an email. Yeah. Look for Dewey Phillips.
He's in it.
Okay, good deal. Well, of course, it won't be him. It'll be someone portraying him. He's been dead since 1968.
I'll let you know who plays it.
All right, good deal.
All right. Thank you, Raleigh. You have yourself a good night. Be healthy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you too. Yeah, when Dewey was on WHBQ, and this is prior to rock and roll, this is like, oh, man, from the late 40s through the mid-50s, and he was on 9 to Midnight, and he was just huge. The show was Red Hot and Blue, and it was, this guy was, well, if he didn't take speed, I don't know how he achieved it. You know, I used to say that about B. Mitchell Reed, too, but just a frenetic delivery and a great sense of humor, and he was good knowing the music. And, of course, he was the first disc jockey to broadcast That's All Right, Elvis Presley's debut record on Sun. In fact, he played it over and over again. And so that was part of the deal. And they became close friends, I think, during as close as you could be to Dewey Phillips. And anyway, that was him. I'd absolutely love to. And I know they had a musical Memphis that was loosely based on Dewey Phillips, but emphasis on loosely. So, yeah. 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh. We'll get to Stacy and Algonquin and James on the south side. And there's room for you too this hour. And more whispers. In fact, coming up is one of those things I say. It's kind of a love-hate relationship on some of this Dory production. And, man, Needle in a Haystack on Dory, it was redone later, and I'll get to that. But when I first heard this, I thought, whoever is the audio engineer for Needle in a Haystack, that's exemplar number one, exhibit number one. Take him out back and shoot him, and you'll see what I mean coming up on WGN Radio. The absolute worst production ever. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yeah, that's the Whispers. And I remember when that came out in 67, I said, that's a great record, but we need to shoot the recording engineer. Well, it came out again a couple times on Soul Clock and on Janus. And of course, Soul Clock was kind of falling apart, and some of those masters went to Janus. But on the one hand, had the Dory version been produced better, that would be my favorite. But undeniably, the Soul Clock and Janus version was a lot cleaner. You know you're searching in vain.
One sweet girl, is it faithfulness? It's so hard to find. Like peace of mind, it's like trying to find. Needle in a haystack, somebody show me mercy.
Better production, but not as much soul. There was another version on Soul Clock as well, in between the one that ultimately came out on Janice and the one on Dory, but enough of Needle in the Haystack. And maybe enough of the Whispers. I don't know. I'll leave that to you. But Stacy is in Algonquin. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you doing?
All right. How about yourself?
Oh, a little bit neck anxiety.
Yeah? Tell me about it.
But I have to give my condolences. Everybody is dying. And to Lisa Marie?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
We had... this is terrible. All these people are dying.
Yeah. I know.
But we had a friend, Peter Guerin, who we saw at different clubs, and he did an Elvis impersonation. He was excellent. And he told us once when he was in Vegas, he was talking to Elvis, and Elvis told him, Peter, you're the best one that does him.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And he was. He was fabulous. And then, we used to see him at all the clubs he went.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to give a shout-out, my friend, you know, Mark and Desiree. Desiree is listening. Hello, Desiree. She's back at
all
home.
Right.
She's doing a little bit better.
Good.
She's walking a little bit more. And I talked to her, so I'm so glad about that.
Good.
And I have my dentist appointment, just a cleaning, Wednesday.
Excellent.
It better just be that.
A little can go wrong with that. Even deep cleanings. A little goes wrong. You'll be fine.
But I just can't believe how many people are...
Oh, I know.
What is this with everybody passing away?
Yeah, well... there's all sorts of conspiracy theories if you want to get into that. I won't get onto that on the radio, that's for darn sure. But if you start looking about online, you can have conspiracy du jour.
Okay. Now, when Tracy and Michelle were bringing stuff up, so did I tell you that they found my little circular thing that I kept all of my 45s in?
Oh, no. That's great.
Yeah, and I've got, you know, sold the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
But do you think I should hold on to them for a while?
Well, that depends on what they mean to you in terms of not just the memory, but will you play them?
Well, I probably have to get a record player.
Well, that's easy enough to do if you want to play them, but if you don't think you'll play them, then probably not. Now, what you've got are probably hits, because that's usually what people buy. And when you have hits, they don't really have any collectible value. So it's not like you're holding on to something that's worth a lot. Like people who say, well, I have this Beatle album. There's no Beatle album in terms of the stuff that sold commercially that's worth anything. Same with hit records. Now, the records that bring $30,000 or stuff like that are things where there are five known copies. Things like Frank Wilson, Do I Love You on Motown, you know. Because there were so it's just like collecting coins or stamps, you know, the one-offs. Like if there was like a Beatles album could be valuable if there was something wrong with it that made it collectible, you know, like
something inside of it.
Well, but it's not going to be because someone went out and bought Meet the Beatles or Introducing the Beatles or something like that. So if you've got hits, they don't really have value. So if you think you're going to save them because they have collectible value, well, they probably don't. So then it comes down to, do you want the clutter because you're going to play them? And if you are, and if they're your favorite records, then of course you keep them. But if you're saying, you know, I don't want to get a turntable, and if I want these records, I'll just buy CDs or whatever you do, then
you know what we've done? We have sold albums and Raldo's Mine,
mm-hmm.
other records. You know, they've been finding jewelry boxes. I found my high school ring from Roosevelt.
Oh, that's great. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay
okay.
Right where you are.
Okay.
And we will find out what's going on in the WGN Radio newsroom on WGN Radio.
Thank you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and yep, those are the Whispers, and this is on Soul Clock. And after 1967, the run at Dory was pretty much over. And as I say, 9 singles and great, great songs. Some of them produced better than others, but still wonderful, wonderful stuff, and absolutely no hits. And so it was, they became very popular in the Bay Area, even without chart records. They would win the Battle of the Bands contests, local acts and stuff like that. And so it was that Ron Carson had a label in the Bay Area, Soul Clock, and later it was moved to L.A. when Lenny and Wally Roker bought it. But at the time, it was Ron Carson who knew what they were about and said, we're gonna sign them. And it was while they were on Soul Clock that's when Gordy Harmon decided he was leaving. And that's when Leval DeGree came in, who had previously sung with the Friends of the Distinction. And one of the first things they put out was What Will I Do? And Remember Me, which we'll play next. And I thought that was just a tremendous record. And of course, like all the Dory stuff, absolutely nothing happened to it. Ah, but then the next single, and we'll get there. We're talking to Stacy in Algonquin, who I rudely interrupted. So carry on, Stacy.
Raleigh, do you know anything about... We found a bunch of old postcards from my parents.
Yeah.
And with old... Do you know anything about old stamps? Are they worth anything?
You know, most aren't. And, like, I've got a bunch of those old postcards from relatives that are made out of leather. And, you know, from the 1800s. And they've got, you know, postage stamps and all that. And I don't think they're worth a darn. I've never thrown them out. I've got them somewhere just with a batch of stuff. But, you know, you'd really need to talk to someone in collectibles. But sure, stamps are a lot like anything else, like coins or records. If you have them that are rare, and especially if they're not canceled and they're in good shape, yeah, that can be a lot of money. But the chances are that that's the case with any stamp you have, probably not. As far as the postcard itself being collectible, you know, I'm sure some are, but I would say that 99.9% aren't.
So just kind of check it out.
Well, it's sort of a thing that how do you feel about it? Now, obviously, if you've got a 1907 postcard that has a Franklin stamp on it, that's going to be a lot of money. But so it depends what you've got. And that's where you've got to do some research to find out what you have and whether it's valuable or not. And
it's like from 30s, 40s. And 50s?
You know, I think there are postcards that are worth thousands of dollars, but I have a feeling that most of that is probably going to be actually pre-World War One. But you never know. You'll see some of this. You know, and when we talk about picture postcards, I don't think that they were around before like 1894 or whatever. And so, you know, if you've got them, you know, the picture postcard in color from say 1900, maybe you've got something. But by the time you're looking at things from the 30s, also in Art Nouveau postcards can be worth something, but the likelihood that you've got some of these things, again, this is you're looking at 1900, you know, or maybe you've got something around the turn of that last century that is a suffragette movement thing, where and especially if you've got an anti-suffragette, you know, propaganda.
It was like from a lot from California, where it shows everything.
Yeah,
and
right. I can't imagine. Again, it doesn't sound, but I'm sure that you can either, you know, take a look at online, because, you know, Etsy and sites like that will have collectible postcards, and see if you have anything like it. But for the most part, again, you're looking at something that is going to be either rare or as I say, things that will be old from the 19th century, you know, the 1890s, that may have some mm-hmm. value. And, you know, if it's a political postcard that is in demand for a variety of reasons, like I say, the anti-suffragette postcards were great. The babies were crying, and then underneath it said, Mama's a suffragette, you know, things like that. So those things are going to be collectible, but I think most of the vintage postcards, you might get a couple bucks, but probably not enough to cull them and figure out what they are.
That's the work we have to do.
That's right. All of this stuff requires cataloging and all that kind of stuff, where, as far as I'm concerned, like, people will say, you know, you've got some really valuable records here. I say, my time is more valuable than figuring out which few would be that valuable.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, you know, you can keep them, and one day when you're really bored, you know, you can say, okay, here's my project for when I'm really bored, but don't have too many of those projects, you know.
Oh, Raleigh, my problem is I just feel so lonely. I just miss Raldo so much.
Of course. And trying to go through your postcards are not going to help. It's absolutely true. Of course you do. And I wouldn't expect it would be otherwise. But this is where, of course, it's good that you've got people around you that you can rely on, but also starting to develop new interests. And we talked before about if you've got interests where you can volunteer or something like that, or develop a hobby. Even here in the middle of nowhere, our library has things every day for hobbyists. You know, they've got a crafter day where people, you know, get together and do whatever it is they do with crafts. I don't know, knitting or crocheting or whatever. But so many different things that you know, people here, you can join the book club. It's been around for 90 years.
You know what I want to do?
What?
I want to work on my computer, and wherever I end up, I want my office.
Okay.
And I want to write a book.
Well, and that's perfectly fine. No reason not to. So if you've got a computer, you can start working on that when you feel like it all the time, and just save the drafts. Or if you don't want to type anything yet, you can get a notebook where you just jot down thoughts that you'll want to go in the book. Now, you see, I did that for my book, and then I never consulted the notebook. There are things that I really wish I had put in the book, but, you know, so you have to have a little more follow through. But if you're thinking in terms of, I want to write a book, yeah, get a notebook and, you know, start every time something occurs to you that you think would be book worthy, jot it down.
Okay. And I love your music.
Well, thank you.
And I just want to wish everybody to have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, a safe weekend. Tomorrow is Friday the 13th, but that could be lucky.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the reality is it's just another day, but it's fun. People who are afraid of Friday the 13th, it's called trichodicophobia. I always said that was fear of Richard Nixon. So, you know, I think it's triskaidic, but anyway.
But it could be good luck, too.
Well, absolutely. And there are a number of cultures that think 13 is good luck.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know.
And I know you have other people. And I just wanted to talk with you. I'm so glad. You always make me feel wonderful.
Well, and I'm always delighted to hear from you, so we'll talk soon.
Definitely. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody.
Yeah.
And be safe.
You too.
Blessings.
All right, thanks. Yeah, you know, I always, when I was younger, thought the 13th was some kind of a bad omen. And I remember when my friend Ruth Meyer went to WMCA, you know, and the good guys and all that, 570 New York. I was coming to visit, and God, this was just before she left, actually. So this would be like, you know, 1967, 68. And so she gave me the address, and she said, we're on the 13th floor. And I said, where are you really? She said, no, we're on the 13th floor. And that was the first time I actually encountered one, because all the buildings I'd been in up to that point didn't have a 13, you know. And then I started to do a little research and found out that France considered 13 a lucky number prior to the First World War, and it was used as a good luck symbol on postcards, actually. Italy 13 was the lucky number in Italian football pools. Colgate University, for whatever reason, considers 13 a lucky number. And it turns out that there are a ton of reasons. It's a Fibonacci number, too. And, I don't know that you'll care about that. But just in case, and if you're saying, what's a Fibonacci number? Well, go back and sue your grade school teacher. It would be where each number is the sum of the two preceding numbers. So there you go. And you can figure that out. All right. Or not. Yeah, with calculators today, I doubt anybody actually sits down and does that. But nonetheless, in many areas, 13 is good luck, not bad luck. But tomorrow is Friday the 13th. All right, so Fran is in Austin. What's up, Fran?
Well, I ordered the Rupert Holmes CDs.
Good.
And I was lucky because the one you ordered, I went, because I was still listening to the show, and I went and ordered it, and I got the last one.
Yes, you did. I told you, if you go right now, you'll get it.
You were right. So thank you. I got it. And I got a Rupert Holmes Greatest Hits because I wanted to get Partners in Crime.
Yeah.
But the only copy of Partners in Crime I could see up there was $50.
No. You just be patient on something like that. You wait. Things
yeah,
come up.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
So I thought, okay, I'm not going to get that one now.
No.
I'm going to be happy with the ones I get, but
yes.
I'm going to keep looking.
No. I'd be sick if I paid $50 for a CD. It just wouldn't happen. So
I mean, as much as I love Rupert Holmes, I just don't have that kind of money.
Well, even if you did, I don't know why, but I just won't part with that kind of money for records. And I know I have friends who have paid over $1,000 for 145 or whatever. And I'm like, not me. I'll just burn it from YouTube. I couldn't do that in the past, but
Well, if I could do that, I would, but I don't have the stuff yet to do it. But I'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah,
I'll talk to people and figure out what they use and all that kind of stuff, and I'll get it together. But and I've got all that on my Apple Music thing, but I just wanted to have the CDs
Well, sure.
I'm just sick about getting rid of my records, and it just is one of the worst decisions I ever made. And
I know. I've several times in my life I've culled my records because I move so many times, and invariably there's something that I will get rid of that I'll later say, why did I get rid of that? But the reality is, most of them I wasn't that sorry to see go. So, and I'm sure, if I ever find the time, I'll cull them again. Only this time, I don't think I'll find much of a record store that wants to buy them. But, I remember I really wanted a copy of the Honeybees on Garrison doing Never in a Million Years. And I talked to Val, and he said, oh, I've got that record. I said, great, I want a copy. He said, I paid $1,000 for mine. I said, never mind, I'll just rip it somewhere. It's very nice, but no thanks.
I would never be able to sell my collection to collectors, or even if I had something valuable, because I use them.
Well, I'm the same way. In fact, John, who will be still buying vinyl now, I'll say to him all the time, "Well, why'd you buy that? We've got it." He said, "Have you seen the quality?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, yeah. I've been known to use them as a dinner plate." So
I remember when I first met Gary, the thing I was embarrassed about was my record collection, because he's very
meticulous.
Takes good care of his records and stores them a certain way, and had them real organized, and mine were all
No. They're 45s. They usually won't have shucks. They'll just be in a stack, and I'm flipping through them, so of course.
Yeah, that's me. I had them in little cases and little stacks.
Exactly. you betcha. And so,
I wanted a tangible thing.
Yeah, I agree.
And
I like that, too.
You get thinking, well, I can replace all this stuff on the computer. I can get it all from, wherever. No, you can't, because it doesn't have the cuts in the same order in the same way. And then so much of it, of course, is remastered and
Oh, don't start me. I know. Oh, man.
I know.
That's why with bootlegs, I almost always look for those. Somebody who took their old 45s and put them to a CD, that's my copy. You know, I do not.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I like listening to what you play.
Yeah.
A lot of times I hear something, that's the way I think I remember it sounding.
Right. And believe me, on this computer, there's a lot of them that are rips from CDs. And every time I hear one, I'm like, oh, God, help me. And one of these days, I'm kidding myself. Maybe before I die, I'll find time to go through that. All right. Well, glad you got Rupert.
All right. Yeah, I'm supposed to get it today. We haven't checked the mail yet. Well, this is our morning.
Oh, yeah. Good. Well, let me know.
Okay.
Right. Thanks.
888-876-5593,
WGN Radio. James, and that's the Whispers on Soul Clock 1969. It was the first time they charted nationally on the Billboard Hot 100, got all the way to number 17 on the R&B charts. Actually, it wasn't the Hot 100, it was the R&B charts. The next record made the Hot 100, but this was the first time they charted with anything, and that was August of 1969, and Nick Caldwell and Gordy Harmon wrote that. And within a couple of years, like I say, Gordy Harmon left the Whispers. And the Whispers later, of course, went on to all the hits you know and hopefully love some of them. But to me, it was all about Dory, Soul Clock, Janis. Yeah, so rest in peace, Gordy Harmon, founding member of the Whispers. And the Whispers, yes, the Scott Twins are still performing along with Label Degree. And there aren't many groups who have been around in terms of the Scott Brothers since 1962 and are still going at it now. So that's up there in Dell's territory. So there you have that, 888-876-5593. And that will take us to Cleveland. Dennis, what's up tonight?
Hello, Raleigh. You know, you're really appreciated when you feature some of these groups that have been together for a long time that are kind of like maybe unknown in the area like over here. But anyhow, I think it's fantastic. And more so, I think it's fantastic that you keep the doo-wop alive, like Scotty says. But calling to thank you because I got my mailer with all the goodie stuff. And John was nice enough to certify me as Cleveland Dennis on one of these documents. So that's happiness right now.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm just so glad you played. And there'll be more to come because I know you'll win again.
Sure. But now I want to tell you, Ryle Donner, that one fellow that called in, you know, I think I reported this maybe, but I think it was Valentine's Day last year. Saw his son just on happenstance. He was playing at the Old Republic around the corner from where I live here in Elgin. And I got to talking to him, and I thought he would be the grandson, but he was the son, and he was about, I don't know, 40, 45 and or so. And he said, yeah, my dad was really young in 58. I guess his dad was 17, 18 when he first started. And anyhow.
Well, I'm glad you brought him up because RalDonnerJr.com will tell you everything about him, including where you can see him.
Really?
Yeah, so
I didn't know there were two brothers that were playing. That one fellow that called in did say that. But anyhow, that was, it's very neat. Lisa Marie's airplane used to be at the IX Center outside of the airport in Cleveland, the old Chrysler tank plant. And I got to see it. We had an international show there back in about 1988 or 87. And that airplane was there, and we got to kind of look it over and play around with it. I don't know what it was doing there, but I know it's not there anymore.
Right.
I think it was a Convair or Corsair 880, something like that. But anyhow.
And since you let me say, since you mentioned Raul Jr.'s brother, Eric Donner, you can go to ericdonner.com, E-R-I-K, Donner.com.
That's the one I met.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting, yeah.
Because he's
well. I did touch Elvis's yellow caddy that was at the Westgate one time when I was in Las Vegas, but it's all I got tonight. Just enjoying your show all the time.
Well, good to hear from you. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Awesome.
All right.
Bye now.
So, yeah, I know Eric was at the Town Bar and Grill in Aurora, but that was last month. I don't know where he's going to be next. All right, so I've got, it always happens like this, and I really apologize. James on the South Side sends me hundreds of links, and then I give him a minute. So that's not a good deal. But, James, thank you, thank you, thank you. Are you? James gave up, actually.
Hello.
Oh, there you are. All right. Good, good, good. Hi. Thank you. I really appreciate all the wonderful links.
Well, there was the one that was kind of strange was the one where I guess the about it was about I think it was the person basically got up this sibling told this other child that she was a replacement. I'm like thinking, you don't do that.
Yeah. Yep, a number of wonderful things, and we'll talk about them all next week, and thanks for calling.
Okay, have a nice weekend.
You
okay,
too.
Bye.
All right, so we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls, but above all, I thank you for calling. Thanks to James for all the wonderful links and, of course, Carol for the show prep that makes me sound like I know what I'm doing, which is not an easy task, trust me. We'll reconvene on Monday. I do believe it's a full show for Monday Night Trivia. Tomorrow night is a replay of Monday Night Trivia, but don't call. However, the 16th, which is Martin Luther King Day, we will be live at 10 Central, and I'll be looking forward to talking to you. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.